You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline to bring in one of the best draft experts around the football world from Roto World, Josh Norris. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Norris. Josh, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's talk about the combine. Went there. We'll start there before we get into any Brown specifics, but let's look at the quarterbacks at the combine. What was your key takeaway at that position coming out of Indy?
Yeah, not a lot, to be perfectly honest. Like, one, I wasn't there. But two, a lot of what is going to happen with these quarterbacks, if any changes did occur, it was going to be behind closed doors, on the whiteboard, getting the questions asked, answering them, just seeing where they are, kind of above the shoulders. I mean, on the field, obviously Carson Wentz is the best athlete of the top three. Then there's Paxton Lynch. And then, I mean, Jared Goff, no one's ever talked about his athleticism. But I think on a somewhat even playing field, obviously Wentz and Goff are in different groups. I think we've seen throughout this process that Carson Wentz, you know, fits the buzzwords. He has a strong arm. He's mobile. He's athletic. All these things. And those are the types of qualities for quarterbacks that are on display during Combine Week.
Yeah, and when I look at it, I go there and say, you're not really going to help yourself, but you could put a red flag up if you go out there and don't throw well in shorts and don't look good doing it. But my big question is, the sense that I got from being there was that the Goff-Wentz group separate, those two separated themselves from the rest of the pack to really be the only guys in discussion for the Browns.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. Just watching more and more Paxton Lynch as the season goes on, or as the season ended, I should say. I mean, you can just talk about his offense, right? He played in a rock step release offense, catch and throw. And if it wasn't there on that first read, he leaves the pocket and just put a huge amount of stress on that offensive line. Like, those things do not translate to the NFL.
Correct.
At all. And so for him to theoretically play early in the NFL, he'll have to show things that he did not in college. But I'm with you. I mean, you can see translatable things from Goff, from Wentz, and even with Wentz, he's kind of a step ahead right now over anyone because, I mean, I think the comfort level is there with him after the Senior Bowl. I mean, that could be a huge advantage that he absolutely took advantage of.
He certainly did going down there, and it makes the decision of Connor Cook not to go to the Senior Bowl look all the more fuzzy at that quarterback spot. So let's talk Goff and let's talk Wentz. I know that at least on your latest big board, those guys aren't even in the top 15, let alone the top 20 for you. Right. Is that still the case?
It is. And I can kind of talk about my process here for a little bit.
Sure.
Right? If I believe someone can come in and be a quality starter and elevate the talent around them, because we know that a lot of these quarterbacks are going to come into bad situations, then they skyrocket to the top of the board. It's where I had Marcus Mariota last year. It's where I had Jameis Winston last year. I've had some other quarterbacks there. But if I think that they can grow into that quality starting mold, that they can be good starters and maybe even have to start early on in their careers, then I put them all after first-round grades or those types after first-round grades. So as you can see right now, it's only about 20 to 22 first-round grades I have. And then those quarterbacks are kind of ahead of the second rounders. And yeah, as you mentioned, I'm kind of hedging my bets a little bit right now because I do have it Goff, then Wentz, then Lynch, all in a row. As you guys mentioned, I agree that Lynch has kind of fallen back a little bit. But right now, there's still a long way to go in this process. And it's not so much new information that's going to come out. It's me just reviewing it. Like, I'm just one guy, you know, trying to – as best as I can, reenact what a full scouting department does in some decision-making situations, right? So there could be some shifting in there, but right now, no. I would not personally, if I was in charge of a team, take any of these guys in the top 10, top 20, top 30.
Okay. All right. Strong. And it's fun. It's interesting because, you know, you look at it and there wasn't a clear-cut number one guy in this class, and all of a sudden, coming out of the combine, just from talking to people around the NFL, it's as if, and I don't know if it speaks more to what isn't at the other positions or just how important the quarterback position is, but that Goff and Wentz lock top 10 guys coming out of Indy. But you're saying, in a value standpoint, you don't agree with that.
Right, and I always get the question, like, well, what if you are in Hugh Jackson's position, right? And and you need a quarterback, what do you do? And my answer is that I wouldn't be in his position. You know, from previous years, I would have been in the position to take a quarterback that I preferred more, or put myself in a position to take one, you know?
Yep.
So I would have built my roster a completely different way. I know he didn't, obviously, because he wasn't with Cleveland at the time, but my roster would be looking different than his. So it's tough for me to put myself in his situation right this instant.
Right. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, especially at the quarterback position, once it's all said and done, you can't overdraft or reach for a quarterback who turns out to be a franchise quarterback, and you can't get a good value on a quarterback who doesn't.
And I think that that's a great point, because you know what? If they think that one of them is the guy, if he is their guy, then I absolutely think that they should go and get them. You know,
sure.
None of these guys are my guys. Like I don't think of it that way. But if I'm exactly with you, if they find their one quarterback, because it's not like a lot of these teams go into drafts saying, well, if we get three of these four, or if we get like, you know, one of these four, then we're good.
Right.
No, they find their one. I mean, they want to tie their franchise to one prospect at that position. And if that's available for them, then they should absolutely 100% take him, no matter where he is on my rankings, absolutely.
Josh, when you evaluate quarterbacks yourself, do you prefer the traits? Because what I've been told is basically for the Browns comes down to what they prefer. Do you prefer traits? Do you prefer upside?
Right.
Do you prefer size, which are all the things the boxes checked by Carson Wentz? Or do you prefer processing, winning from the pocket, pure throwing, et cetera, which would favor a guy like Jared Goff? What is your personal take?
It's a great question. And I want someone that can succeed inside and outside of structure.
Uh-huh.
I want someone that can win within the system that he is coached, or that is put out there for him to play in, meaning go through those progressions in a confined space, in a confined pocket, keeping his eyes up absolutely in the face of a pass rush is absolutely important. Not locking on to certain reads, which I see that which Carson Wentz does.
You're right.
On frequent occasion for me, and too often. But then outside of structure, you know, if he's moved off his spot, you know, if he has to kind of freelance a bit. And that's not necessarily running for 10 yards every time he has to do that, right? But it's being able to convert successful plays in unsuccessful situations.
Right.
And I think that we've seen quarterbacks like last year. I thought Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston could both do that. I'm not sure if I see that. And you see it with Jared Goff some, obviously. I think you see it with Paxton Lynch as well.
Yep.
But and as you can kind of tell, I wish you could take certain traits from each one of these passers and build a good quarterback off of that, but obviously that's just impossible.
When you watch Wentz, because here's the trouble I have. I've watched every game on the coach's tape of Goff and of Wentz this year, and obviously Wentz had this injury-shortened season. But
You're a mad man.
Yeah, you watch Wentz, and his receivers, as you talked about, often locks onto his number one read, and for good reason.
Right.
They're usually wide open. I mean, this is a team that even when it lost a guy that's now being talked about being picked at the top of the draft, still went undefeated and lost, yeah, I think, 5 points a game of offense. How do you evaluate a guy when it almost looks that easy for his offense against the competition?
Right. So let me give the huge positive that I love about Carson Wentz, and I'll give you the big negative.
Okay.
The huge positive is that when his receivers are covered well in those one-on-one situations, all the way down the field on those vertical routes, he is not afraid to pull the trigger and go and let those receivers win those contested situations, right?
Yep.
I think, as you mentioned, a lot of these quarterbacks that we see at the college level are thrown to wide-open targets, right, either in zone or even in broken-down coverages in man. And that's easy stuff. You know, that's pitch and catch.
Yep.
But I love that Carson Wentz is willing to make the big play. He can make difficult throws and make them look easy. Now, on the other side of that, there are other instances, and I might be second-guessing myself here or kind of talking over what I just said, but there are situations where he takes his drop or gets it out of the gun and then just stops his feet.
Yep.
It's like you hit the
statue
pause button,
yep,
on him, you know? And it's some of these 12-yard outside breaking routes or kind of timing throws. And instead of throwing with anticipation, right, he just locks in and pauses for like a full second or two. And to me, those completions at the college level turn into incompletions at the NFL level,
or picks,
or even turnovers.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And And then sometimes he does so well after moving off his spot or going to a second read. But then other times he absolutely panics and just throws terrible decisions and terrible passes over the middle of the field that could also turn into turnovers, you know? So he gives you everything that you want in certain situations, but then he kind of corrects himself or shows you the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde end of it on the other side. And so I'm just not sure what side you're going to get consistently, especially if he goes to a team that might not be as talented around him to kind of compensate for the bad decision.
Certainly. And let's go through that same exercise because I enjoyed that with Jared Goff. What do you love about him? What makes you concerned?
And I don't want to call Jared Goff. Okay, first, let's talk about what I love. I love, like, some of his bucket throws with touch are ridiculous, right?
Very
accurate. And they are off unconventional platforms, off unbound spaces. And he just throws these touch bucket throws that are unbelievable and some of the best I've seen over recent years. And so that's kind of the winning out of structure, kind of winning in unconventional ways that I think he kind of separates himself in that area. Now, what I don't love, and I'm not going to call his offense the air raid because it's not exactly. They do some different things. But for as much as we talked about last year with Marcus Mariota's offense being simplistic and that it wasn't NFL-based, right, pro-style, I mean, Jared Goff had some really defined reads himself.
Sure.
You know, and no one's talking about that aspect of it, in my opinion. Right, and I'm not saying he didn't go through progressions. He did, but it could be an action, reaction, and just check down. You know, like progressions, there are varying levels of them. Some are more difficult than others, and for Jared Goff, to me, I think we aren't talking about enough of how much of his progressions and those types of things were very defined for him. But Brent Sobleski, who I follow on Twitter, did a great interview with Goff's Cal offensive coordinator. And that shed some good light on it that we don't get from any of these other prospects. So I need to go back and see if that kind of matches up with what I saw as well.
Yeah, I'm a Goff guy. I've warmed to Wentz, but I like my quarterbacks to process. And it was interesting. I don't know if you saw the comments in Monday Morning Quarterback from Bruce Arians about that same thing, about how important it is. And you know, you go look at a Pro Football Focus and you can see the quarterbacks that get it out in 2.5 or less. And they're pretty well linked to being very successful quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think that it's kind of a flavor thing because it is easy to get wowed, I think, with Wentz's just build and athleticism.
Yes.
And certainly that was on display.
Yeah, and with Jared Goff, you know, he had to throw a lot of passes under a lot of duress.
Yep.
And that's because of the offensive line. I'm not saying it was bad, but that they ran a lot of run-pass options. They did a lot of cut blocks at the line of scrimmage. And so if he holds the ball for any length of time more than he needs to, then he's getting hit, right? So we got to see him get hit in those situations. But then other times I saw him panic and get too excited in situations where he didn't need to be.
Right.
You know? So that also is somewhat troubling that, because I'm not saying the Browns offensive line is bad, but
could look very different in the near future.
Right. Depending on what situation he goes to, we've seen that those instances of quarterbacks that didn't have those issues coming out of college, then getting hit a lot, start seeing ghosts in the pocket.
When you look at these two guys, how do you compare them? Because I know the 2015 class with Jameis and Mariota, different. How do you compare them to the people from 2014, the Bortles, Bridgewater, Carr? Because I'm a huge Teddy guy, and I see a lot of Goff to me is kind of like Matt Ryan's body with some Teddy traits.
Yeah, so I think with Teddy, comparing him to Goff in terms of traits makes a little bit of sense. Now, I think with Teddy, it was a easier evaluation because we saw him do all of those pro-style things at college. Whereas Goff, it's always out of the gun.
Correct.
You kind of have to project it a little bit more. But in terms of rankings, and just talking about the process like I did before, I had Teddy at number one, ahead of Clowney, ahead of Mack, ahead of all those guys, because I thought he could come in and start right away and not really bring the talent around him down, you know, elevate it a bit. And then in that second group, that second round range, I had Derek Carr, I had Blake Bortles, I even had Johnny Manziel, right?
Yep.
So it was guys that could develop into that quality starter, and obviously some of them actually have blossomed into good starters, right?
Yeah.
But I would put this group of quarterbacks in that same group of second quarterbacks as I did in that one. But I'm with you. I mean, I love Teddy probably more than I should have, honestly.
Me too.
But it's because I think that you saw exactly what you wanted to see, you know? And I think that kind of goes into the debate of what was last year with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, that some people thought they couldn't project Mariota, but they saw what they wanted to see with Jameis Winston.
Certainly. Talking with Josh Norris from Roto World. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Norris. He's got a new mock draft, the first one post-combine dropping tomorrow. So, all right, you're Sashi Brown, you're Hugh Jackson. You're sitting there for the Browns and looking at, you know, the success Hugh Jackson's had with a guy like Carson Palmer, but also with a guy like Andy Dalton. What direction are you going at number two for the Browns? Or are you throwing a curveball and you're saying, I don't like these quarterbacks in my top 20. We're going a different direction.
Well, I think you can look at it from two different ways, right? If they somehow land a trade for a quarterback before the draft, right?
Okay.
Then they most likely will not take one at number two. Like, if they go in with the mindset that this is our quality starter or this is our starter, right? This is our guy. So then it would not be a quarterback. And if I was at number two, and this is going to be a complete curveball, and I don't expect them to do that, just based on my board, it'd be Miles Jack.
Okay. Yeah, you love him. Yep.
Because I think he's a foundation piece of an NFL defense. I think that he can be one of the top linebackers, off-ball linebackers in the NFL early on in his career. Like, at the very least, obviously, you don't take him off the field. But then he can make plays in every facet of the game. Now, more realistic, probably is Joey Bosa. But here's the thing with Joey Bosa. I mean, I think everyone wants that transcendent talent at edge rusher. And that's not Bosa. Bosa's very good, though. Like, he's an awesome run-defending edge player who understands who he is as a pass rusher in terms of wanting to go through you with violence and explosion and using his hands. And I think that that can be a very good player on a defense, but maybe not your 15 sack guy, but maybe your 8 to 10 sack guy, right?
And do you compare him more to like a Jared Allen than just – I just think because he's from the Big Ten, everybody says J.J. Watt. He's not J.J. Right. Watt.
No, he's not at all. And I compare him to Preston Smith, actually,
okay.
who went in the second round last year. But I loved him. I had Preston Smith as like the number 13 player last year. And then Preston Smith led all rookies with 8 sacks last year.
Good job by you.
Yeah, well, you know, that was a subtle pat in the back for me.
I liked it.
But yeah, I mean, Joey Bosa, like you said, like I think everyone coming off of the Super Bowl is looking for that next Von Miller. Hey, guys. There's no Von Miller in this class, you know? Von Miller is so good at turning the corner and being flexible at the hips and all that kind of stuff, and Bosa is not. Like, he is a straight-line guy who actually tested with really good agility scores, which shocked me. But I think it's good that he understands who he is, though, because you see a lot of these college rushers that lack awareness in that area, that they need to be power guys, but they try to win with speed, and that's not Bosa. Bosa's going to go right through you.
Absolutely. Josh, I know I appreciate the time very much, so I'll just ask you this last one. If you were going, because you have them back-to-back, but for the Browns and the situation with Hugh Jackson, if you had to pick one of these two quarterbacks, and I'll leave it at Goff and Wentz, who would you pick?
I would pick Jared Goff, and it's for the many reasons that we spoke about earlier. But I don't know, I mean, we probably don't have 5 minutes to talk about this. But
yeah, as much time as you want.
This whole hand size thing is interesting.
What do you think about it?
So I think that hand size is like any other measurement that teams use as a threshold.
Correct.
So like the Seattle Seahawks, right? The last 5 corners that they've taken all have 32-plus-inch arms,
yep.
Right? Because they think that is the mold of the player that fits their system. So for me, it's not like a quarterback with 10.5-inch hands is better than one with 9.75, you know? To me, it's more of a threshold thing, and I've heard 9 inches for some teams. I've heard 9.5. So, I mean, if Goff doesn't fit the threshold, then he doesn't fit the threshold, you
sure.
know? But I don't think ranking them based on that or even adjusting based on that is the right process or right use of that measurement in an evaluation.
All Goff's got to do is go find the hand masseuse for the guy from the Senior Bowl who picked up 3/8 of an inch. Right. Get that. Now he's at 9 3/8, and nobody's talking about this anymore.
There we go.
It is interesting, but it is cold weather. I go back to, for him, the one game that you could say was coldish was Arizona State, 46 degrees, I believe it was. There was some wind that day, and as we know, in that one, Jared Goff threw for over 500 yards and 5 touchdowns, rallying Cal to a win. Yeah, not too shabby. All right, if there's one quarterback, let's say the Browns were to go and do the Washington model. Say they take Goff at 2, and you come back in the middle rounds, there's somebody that they like. Who's that guy for you that could be that Kirk Cousins or that middle-round quarterback that could really return some value this year?
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like every year we all have this one middle round quarterback that we love.
Sure.
I don't really have that one this year.
Okay.
But you mentioned him, Brandon Allen at Arkansas. You know, this offense, I think many perceive it as like a run first or just stack the box and try to overpower the other defensive line. But this year they put a lot in his plate. You know, they spread it out a lot more. They asked him to attack every level of the field, and he did it, and it was with inside a structure, and he kept his eyes up and all those things, right?
Yep.
And then also Jacoby Brissett. I like Jacoby Brissett a lot from NC State.
Yep.
Now, I don't think he's really a big play threat, either outside of the pocket or with the downfield arm, even though he hit some of those throws. But, again, if you're a head coach or an offensive coordinator and you have to go to your second-string quarterback, at the very least, you want him to process what you're coaching. You want him to go through the game plan and maximize, you know, what is there for him to take. And I think Jacoby Brissett can absolutely do that, and he showed it in NC State.
When you look at the options at 32 for the Browns, say you get them their quarterback early, you come back at 32. You know, we've heard names like Josh Doctson, Michael Thomas, yeah. Will Fuller. Who would you like for the Browns at that spot at number 32? And will any of those three guys be there, in your opinion?
I love all three. And you know what? And I'm glad you asked about all these wide receivers. Seems like everyone's down on this wide receiver class.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Good.
I have six of these receivers in the top 32 overall.
Okay.
And including the three names that you mentioned. What's crazy about Josh Doctson is obviously Corey Coleman, Laquon Treadwell did not work out at the combine
yep.
or go through full workouts. And all Josh Doctson did was go out and show like the top athlete at the position.
Yeah. Off the charts.
Right. And then you turn on obviously his tape. And he's just making contested catches. He's floating in the air.
Yep.
I think that his routes are further along than other people do. He's just not a good yards after catch receiver. Now, on the other hand, you talked about Michael Thomas. I think Michael Thomas favorably compares to Michael Crabtree.
Yes.
And even on the kind of like the Demaryius Thomas spectrum a little bit, like kind of that sneaky athleticism after the catch. Like it's not explosive or a lot of speed or quickness. But it builds up, and then he can just run away from people, you know?
Yeah.
And Michael Thomas had some great footwork on some of his routes as well, and I think he kind of took a step back in that offense this year, one, because I think Urban wanted to get the ball to Braxton Miller as much as possible, and two, the quarterback play obviously went back.
Yes.
And a lot of that is probably due to Tom Herman as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then quickly with Will Fuller, I mean, I love Will Fuller, but you know that when you draft him, he's going to come with drops.
Sure.
And you need to be patient with that. But in terms of big plays, and I think big plays just behind turnovers can really change the scope of a game.
Absolutely.
Will Fuller has easy speed to get vertical and will create those big plays if you live with the drops as well.
Yeah, just get open. Don't drop the ones that make everybody go, oh, I know he does that from time to time, but did a good job at the combine. I think people were really watching him when he ran the gauntlet and did a very good job hanging on to the football and flashed that there. So the last one, Scotty Buckeye, one of our regular callers on here, is maybe the biggest and most obsessed Buckeye fan. He's got a bet with a Michigan fan on the number of Buckeyes that go in the first round. Four is the push. He wins at five. He loses at three. Does Scotty Buckeye win that bet, Josh?
So Noah Spence does not count as a Buckeye.
Correct.
Okay. So let's talk through them. Like Ezekiel Elliott will go in the first round.
Okay.
Joey Bosa will go in the first round. Okay. So then probably the third is Darren Lee. Absolutely.
Okay.
So then his other possibilities are the offensive tackle.
Decker.
It is, Taylor Decker, Michael Thomas.
Yep.
Von Bell.
Yep.
And who am I missing?
Eli Apple, the corner.
Oh, Eli Apple. Correct.
So and Braxton, but I feel like the 4-5 may have knocked him out of the first round.
So he needs four.
Yep. He needs five to win, four for a push.
I think he's going to get the push. I think we'll see four.
Four.
And I think it'll be Taylor Decker probably.
Okay. There it is. Scotty Buckeye. That's what it is. Josh, great stuff. Very much looking forward to your mock draft tomorrow, which drops at rotoworld.com.
Me too.
Yeah, I bet you are again. I'd be happy to be done with it. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter for the very latest and great draft coverage at Josh Norris on Twitter. Josh, appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, guys, anytime.
All right, you got it. We'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily right here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Gibbs. Gibbs, during the Josh Norris interview, which was excellent, when hand size came up, we decided to measure our hands. I'm 10 and you're 10.
No, you're
and
9
half.
And 9 and 7 eighths.
Oh.
It was 10.
No, it's not.
Let me see it again.
Uh-oh.
It's right on the 10, bro.
No, it's not, bro. That's the 10.
See, that's kind of like your wide receiver that, you know, is 200 pounds. No, he's not.
Bro.
Do the math, bro. Come on.
So he's got small hands?
Short.
Yeah. How big are your hands, Will?
9 7/8 Mine are 10 1/2
Oh.
It's bigger than 7 1/8 But they'd probably have to call it 7 1/8
Yeah, it'll be 7. 9 7/8
And you are 10 3/8
10 3/8 Okay.
Strong. No, yeah. No issues for us.
Nah, man.
I don't know, man. You're not 10.
What do you mean not 10?
You're like under 10.
So what?
You're Goffish.
Yeah.
No wonder he's Goffish.
Sorry.
Goffish. Goff's 9 flat
That's small.
It's weird.
Maybe you're not going to get that chance to
throw
some footballs.
We'll do it again next break. Legit.
I can get. What do you mean? The minimum threshold is 9 inches I'm well above that. Johnny Manziel had the biggest hands at the combine in that year and had 9 7/8
How'd that work out?
Exactly. Exactly. So are the phones open? People can call in if they want?
The phones are fixed, I think. So let the calls begin.
There you go. Let the calls begin. How about Scotty Buckeye getting a mention out there?
I know. Josh Norris answering the fans.
Yeah. Do you believe – how many Buckeyes do you think go in the first round?
Me?
Yeah.
Immediately when I was listening to the interview, I said over. I will go the absolute locks that I think are first round are obviously going to be Darren Lee, Ezekiel Elliott, Travis, his name just escaped me, the tackle, Taylor Decker, and Bosa. Those are the four. And I just have a feeling that one or the other, I think it might actually be one of the two DBs. Someone's going to take a liking to Von Bell or Eli Apple.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yep. But I do, and I think that 10 will go in the first three rounds.
Okay. Okay.
Because you're talking, I think Joshua Perry, middle linebacker, has a great shot of being, you know, a first, second, or a second and third round pick. Braxton creeps his way into that. Michael Thomas will be a second round pick. The other DB that doesn't get drafted in the first round, whether it be Von Bell or Eli Apple, will, of course, be a second round, early third as well. Great chance of that. Jalen Marshall, still surprising that he came out, and I want to understand the reason why behind it. Probably going to be a fifth round stretch or a sixth or seventh round pick.
I don't get it at all. I don't get that at all.
Measurables, eh. I mean, he was explosive, but not fast.
No, he did not look
good.
What
did he run? 4.6, 4.7, 4.6 something?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't come out and run a 4.6 something.
No, not at that size. You certainly don't. Let's go to the phone lines. By the way, Mary Kay Cabot says, after communicating with Alex Mack's agent, Tim Younger, today, I really believe he wants to remain with the Browns. Price will be set March 7th. So he opted out his contract, hits free agency on March 7th, can't sign until the 9th. But he wants to remain
What else is going to happen on the 9th?
That's when everything happens. We'll see.
What happens relevant to the Browns on the 9th?
Oh, there is a countdown for something. We'll see. All right, let's go to the phones. We've got our guy, Blackwell, in Cleveland.
Hey, what's up, guys? God bless.
Thank
God
you,
bless
man.
You, man. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Hey, like, I remember you guys talking earlier today about, like, Goff and Wentz and Goff, and how you could, how, like, you're going to have to sit Wentz for a year and Goff is ready to play. I think that I wonder, like, anybody who wants to go with Wentz and sit them for a year, what makes you think that you're going to even have the luxury of sitting your quarterback when history has shown us repeatedly that if you draft the Browns quarterback, you're going to have to play him at some point during the first season that he's there as a rookie. They try to rest.
We've been playing three a year every year.
Right. You're not going to get that luxury. I mean, I'm not the biggest Goff guy, but one thing I learned in life is you deal with what's in front of you, and he's probably the guy that we're going to take. You got to go with somebody that can play immediately, right away, and you know what I'm saying? Because it's gonna happen. You're going to have to put him in. I'd rather just ride with Goff, rest him. I mean, well, not rest him, but let him learn first 5 or 6 games. But if it's not going right, with Luke McCown, you got to put him in. Like, why would you don't have the luxury of drafting a quarterback that you can fit because he played in Division 8. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not a luxury. You don't get cute with the second round pick. I'm gonna be quiet. Let you guys do what you do. Have a good day.
Appreciate it, Blackwell. Thank you. No, I think you're right. I think that it depends on what your deal is. Now with the Browns, you do have the luxury of saying, hey, it's okay if we have to sit Wentz a year. No, he might be thrust into action. Now, that's what in Jacksonville, they were going to sit Bortles, and then Henny played poorly, and he got in there. In Oakland, they were going to sit Carr, and Schaub was terrible, so he played. And in Minnesota, they were going to sit Theodore, and I believe it was a Matt Castle that got – somebody got hurt, he took over and never looked back. So you can always have those intentions, but I think you're right. The guy's going to have to play at some point, and that's okay. I mean, the Browns aren't – it doesn't seem like right now, while the goal is to go out there and get to the Super Bowl, the Browns aren't at this moment in danger necessarily of going out there and winning the Super Bowl. So there's not pressure to have the guy, but it would be good to get him as much experience so that when you are ready, he's had a lot of game experience in the National Football League and is ready to help your team.
Absolutely, and I think for most fans, especially here in Cleveland, after last year's draft going Winston, Mariota, both of them starting right out of the gates, your expectation is when you have a top five pick or the number two overall pick is that you draft a guy, and because it happened last year, it should happen this year. But as many have said, this year's draft offensively is not as talented as it's been in years past, and that Goff and Wentz most likely in last year's draft would have been by far and away, it would have been Mariota, Winston, Gap, Goff, Wentz.
Yes.
Maybe in the top 10, but maybe in the teens.
Beautiful. Let's go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain dealer, Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, how are you?
I'm fine, guys. How you doing?
Good. Doing very well, Mary Kay. You recently reported on Twitter. You talked to Alex Mack's agent and think that there is a chance he can stay there. Can you kind of elaborate on those discussions?
Well, you know what? Alex really does want to be here. All the things that have happened so far in the offseason have helped him make up his mind that this is where he wants to be. He really is very tight with a lot of his teammates, as you guys know. He's
sure.
Very close to Joe Thomas, Mitchell Schwartz, Joel Bitonio, and those guys. So that's a huge factor. Then he flew in here. He met with Hugh Jackson. He really likes him. He has an opportunity to perhaps block for fellow Cal star Jared Goff, or maybe a Carson Wentz. So I think these guys see a good quarterback in their future, and they're excited about that. He's entrenched in the community. This is obviously where he was drafted, and I just think that he loves the fan base, and most guys that come through here really end up loving playing for Cleveland, even though it's been challenging on the field.
Mary Kay, would the Cleveland Browns, for Alex Mack to be retained on a new contract, have to make Alex Mack the highest paid center in the National Football League for him to come back to Cleveland?
Yeah, and it's not just that he is demanding to be the highest paid center in the NFL, but that's just the way it's going to work out. That's the next top center that signs is going to end up being the top paid center in the NFL.
Sure.
He's a three-time Pro Bowler. And I compared it to Pouncey's contract last year. I think he's at $8.95 right now.
You're exactly right.
Alex stands to be the first $10 million a year center in the NFL. I personally think that he's worth it. That way you can use Cam Irving, as a little bit of a swing man, let him fill in certain places and kind of get up to speed. I mean, these guys have the cap money. You might as well spend it on guys like him that really want to be here, are Pro Bowlers, and then you're not weakening a position.
A great talk with Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So, Mary Kay, you think something in the neighborhood of 9 to 10 is probably what it's going to take to keep Alex Mack here, but are you more optimistic about Alex staying today than you were maybe a week ago?
Yes, I am. I really am. I mean, they're going to have to come through with the money,
sure,
obviously. But I am definitely more optimistic about it. At least from his end, he definitely, he definitely wants to be here, and I think that helps. In fact, sometimes you might even take a slight hometown discount if you really want to stay in a place. And I think that there's a greater chance of that right now. And he doesn't have to take much of one because You know, he will make money out there. But, you know, I do think that, you know, all things being equal, this is where he wants to be.
And Mary Kay, obviously, you know, we're talking Alex Mack, you know, mm-hmm. with your recent tweet about speaking to his agent. Do you have any feelings or, you know, any back channel information about the other three main free agents that could potentially hit the market for the Cleveland Browns besides Alex Mack?
You know, I've been trying to stay as closely connected as I can. I know that they are in contact with those agents. Now, once you get to this point, it is time, really, to let the market set your price on March 7th when teams can enter into negotiations with other teams. Therefore, you know, that's when you're going to find out how much Travis Benjamin is really worth. And I think sometimes both sides want to know what that price really is. You know, sometimes a team might want a player to go out and find out, hey, you know, you're not going to make the $9.5 million a year that you think you are. So maybe you might be more motivated to come back and sign. Some of these guys, I've been kind of laughing about this part of it. Some of these guys have fallen in love with girls from Cleveland, or their wives are from Cleveland, their girlfriends or fiancés are from Cleveland. And I think that when you have that situation, then that factors into your decision. I mean,
sure.
Mitchell Schwartz's fiance is from here. Travis Benjamin's wife is a established radio personality from here. So those things also, you know, do factor in when it comes to where you want to be.
Mary Kay, thank you so much for hopping on with us. Thanks for that. And we're excited about the positive tweet there regarding Alex Mack. And I'm sure you'll have more coverage on your Twitter at Mary Kay Cabot. And of course, at Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Nathan and Matt and Gibbs. Uh-oh, first one in a while. Anyway, we are back, so that's good. Connor Orr from NFL.com echoing the sentiments, saying that I just spoke with Alex Mack. I spoke with Alex Mack down in Hawaii, where he said the Browns were going in the right direction. Mack's agent says return to the Browns still on the table, according to Pro Football Talk. So it's interesting, because Sashi had said at the combine he thought if he was going to get it done, it would be before he opted out. Now his agent is telling Cleveland.com the client becoming a free agent is a procedural move. Mack won't rule out a return to the Browns after testing the market. Says the opt-out was built into his contract to afford him maximum flexibility. For the first time in his career, he will be experiencing true free agency. Although we anticipate interest from multiple teams, he was very impressed with Hugh Jackson. Returning to the Browns certainly remains on the table. If that's the case, does he really just want to go out there to test the market? Or do you think that, you know, if that's the case and the Browns were willing to pay him, which I would assume they would be, why wouldn't it just be done?
Right, and I think, does he want to go out there and test the market? Because, as Mary Kay said, three-time Pro Bowler, very well-respected throughout the league, already had an offer, a significant offer from Jacksonville 2 years ago, so he understands the demand for a player of his status. Does he want to go out and hit free agency to drive up his price, to kind of alleviate the hometown discount, to garner the interest of winning football programs, to leverage against the Cleveland Browns to maybe hit that $10 million a year number?
So the top contracts out there for centers, Mike Pouncey in Miami, $8.95 per year, 11 guaranteed, 24.6% of his contract guaranteed. Rodney Hudson with the Raiders, $8.9, 12.65 guaranteed, 28.4%. Marquise Pouncey is at $8.827 per year, and $13 million guaranteed. So those are the top three safeties. The only other guy above him would be John Sullivan from the Vikings at $8.5 million. That was just a one-year deal. So I think Alex Mack's got an opportunity here to get north of nine, probably get in that nine, maybe 10 range, and we'll see if that happens to be with the Cleveland Browns. I think a lot of people would feel a lot better if the Browns were able to get one of those guys
Agreed.
Back.
Yep, I agree.
All right, that will do it for us today. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. Big thanks to Josh Norris at Roto World. For Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura, saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.